Good evening and welcome to the HipSid podcast. This week's podcast is quarantine podcast. For the first time, our co-host, Sherry Barkley, is unavailable. She is quarantined in Edmonton, Canada. However, due to the current epidemic, it has forced me to reconnect with dear friends, dear souls. So I am thrilled to have on the podcast this week a couple of special guests, two of my best friends, because now that I've been quarantined, I've been calling all my best friends back home in England. So we have joining us my best friend since childhood, Jonathan Posner. Are you there?
Good evening from Edgware. Hello, Simcha, Ronnie, how are you?
All right, so I apologize to the gentle listeners for the horrendous sound quality. However, we're Zooming. We're using satellites. We're using technology. We're using lasers. We're going the next level. We also have joining us Adam Bradley. Are you there from London, England?
Good to hear you. How are you doing, Winey? And I don't think the audio quality is that bad. I think it's you two with your Mancunian accents, to be honest.
Let me explain for the listeners how the three of us, how we met and how we bonded and how our friendship has flourished. So, Posse, we go back. I think our fathers were friends, okay? That's how far we go back. I know Posse from kindergarten, so that means we've been friends for perhaps 40 years at this point, okay, Posse? 40 years.
So, 4-0, baby.
It's a long time. So about 21, 22 years ago, me and Posse decided to go on a trip to Israel. Right, Posse? You remember?
Like it was yesterday.
So Aisha Torah were offering, I think it was a 99 quid, 10-day intensive trip to Israel. The poster had beaches. The poster had beers. The poster had spring break fun.
And the poster in the south of England also had £199.
Oh, you were 100? Oh, so we paid
99.
I think you got gypped because I paid 99.
That was what you call sudden inflation.
Exactly. There you go. So we got to Israel, and the beach was not something that we saw. We spent 10 days of heavy brainwashing, religious coercion, and on that trip,
It was three and a half weeks.
It was?
You went on the follow-up. That was 10 days.
I remember. Okay, 3.5 weeks. I got my money's worth. I'll tell you that much. So on that trip, we met Adam Bradley. Before we get into the podcast, I want the listeners to find out a little bit about you both. Posse, tell the listeners where you come from, where you're up to, how you've been spending your quarantine time, and how close are you to murdering your entire family?
Thank you for the multi-layered question. I think I'm going to start from the backwards that I remember. And unfortunately, being 43 years, you've asked me 5 questions. I can't remember the last one because that was the last one. So just to tell you that I love my family and I don't want to throttle them anymore. But at one point, we almost did. But let's be honest, quarantine is not for the faint-hearted. It's about readjusting your floor plan to make certain rooms make more options for you. But we're fine. How do we know each other? Well, the story is as thick as it is long. It's Manchester, 1980s, primary school, King David. And I meet these people, and one of these people is Simon Weinstein. And we just ended up becoming friends because you supported Man City. And I was like, I like you. I like Man City. I like you. So let's go and play football. And from there,
I think our parents went to the same school, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so God bless your dad, Eddie. Send my love to Eddie and Val. They went to King David that we went to in the 1950s.
Wow. There you go. All right. So then...
Roll forward to the 90s, we're in school together. We go on this age trip. We spend many of our teenage years clubbing in Manchester, Canal Street. We just went down to Lubavitch and said, why are they happy? And we basically went in from there. We went on age fellowships. And we then met Adam Bradley at the back of the El Alf jumbo jet. We're all having a cigarette. We met Adam. I'm just so happy to see you, my friend. And we've got so much to go through, but I've never, just because we live thousands of miles away, I've always felt you was as close as you are in person as you're not. I can sometimes listen to your Hipsid podcasts with
Sherry B in Edmonton.
She's amazing, but whenever you speak, all I do is finish your sentences for you. So I can still remember us walking around Prestwich in the 1990s, and we would finish each other's sentences. I love you. I'm so happy to be a guest with you, and bring on what we're going to be talking about in a bit.
I love you, Pozzy. And now that I'm stuck home with the family, usually when you call me, it's at the worst hours possible. You call me, I'm like, oi vey, it's Pozzy. Now you call me, I'm stuck home, I got the kids, I got the wife, I'm all in. So it's given me a chance to reconnect. That's one of the, I guess, there's no silver linings right now, but it has been a benefit of this terrible pandemic that I have had the chance to reconnect with the friends. So, Adam Bradley, dear friend, would you like to share with the gentle listeners how we connected and a little bit about yourself? And the same question, much like The Shining, have you been tempted to murder your entire family in the quarantine?
Oh, in the quarantine?
Yeah. Making a Shining comment.
Well, I find it interesting you say that Johnny always calls you when it's a difficult moment in quarantine, but we've got 12 children between the three of us. When isn't a difficult moment? I mean, look, 12...
very good point.
A small family in some communities. But right.
And you have 5 girls.
I do. And so honestly, like? it's paradise. I love it. It's just... Look, there are moments, of course. You know, my oldest is 17 and...
There you go.
She's stuck in quarantine and I look back at what I was doing at 17 and, I mean, this would have driven me mad. So it's hard for them in quarantine. It really is. The younger ones are okay, you know. It's a bit boring for them, but, you know, there's 7 of us. There's always something going on here. There's always a song or a dance bit going on. And right. Everyone seems to be just enjoying each other's company at the moment.
Just to let the listeners know that trip to Israel was so pivotal that you met your wife on that trip.
I did indeed. Yeah.
There you go.
I grew up in Bournemouth, in sunny, sunny Bournemouth on the south coast of England. And I had a choice one summer whether to spend a summer working in hotels in Bournemouth or to go to Israel for cheap. No brainer. So, yeah, and then I met some of the most important people in my life there.
There you go.
Obviously not Oswine.
And I met you two.
And you met us as well.
Could you imagine if we were quarantined, if this was like when we were like, my youngest is 8 years old. I couldn't imagine being quarantined at 8 years old. What would we do? I had 4 channels on the television. I'd be watching Rolf Harris for the next 4 months. My kids have got God Disney forbid. Plus.
As I was saying, my oldest is 17, my youngest is 5. I can't think of any age that I could have handled this. But the older particularly, I just wanted to be out all the time. Yeah. As a teenager, out in the streets and into town, and this must be so...
Well, hard. Just on that point, Adam, I was over-listening to Ruby, who's our eldest, and she's 14, and she's in year 9. And at the first time I heard her say, I really miss the social side of school.
Yeah, my kids do.
Homework she loves, she gets on with it, but the social really struggling.
Yeah, they're missing their friends a great deal. And your friends, when you think about it, your friends when you're a child are the most important because they're the people you can connect on a closer level. Your parents
will do
everything you can for the kids. Right. Your siblings will always be there for you. But at 17, you can only really connect with other 17-year-olds. At 14, you can only, you know what I mean? So it's actually the fact that they've got all this kind of WhatsApp and Zoom and that is life-saving for them, if you ask me.
Right.
It's a big concern for them.
So, should we get on to the meat of the podcast?
Do it.
We've had the bread.
Yes, brother.
The bread, it's time for the meat. Pozzy had a great idea because now that we're all quarantined and we're all, if you like, shipwrecked on an island, you see what I did over here, that one of my favorite BBC radio shows was Desert Island Discs. And just to explain to the American listeners what Desert Island Discs is, it's an English... You want to explain, Adam? Because you're like a radio guy.
So Desert Island Discs is a show that's been going 40, 50 years where...
1942.
Oh, please. So
yes, you've done your homework, and you said you don't do any preparation.
Nearly 80 years. Oh,
yeah, that's how much preparation I've done as well.
That's the kind of instant knowledge you get from Rabbi Simcha.
There you go.
So anyway, from 80 Wikipedia. Years nearly. Basically, BBC presenters, and it's always been quite a one of their biggest showcase programmes, where they have a great presenter and they invite celebrities of the times, whether they're other newsreaders, whether they could be scientists or musicians,
sports people,
anyone, people that are in the public view.
Not us.
They'll give them, I think it's five songs that they can choose to take with them to, if they were stranded on a desert island, and just explain why they would choose those songs and what those songs mean to them.
There you go. So me and Palsy had this idea. Let's do Corona Island discs because we're all stuck home. And really, the point of Desert Island Discs was to explore the possibilities of loneliness and the meaning of isolation. So musical selections remind us of the bonds that we have made in life up until now. And they give us comfort and they give us solace. So rather than do the five songs, I figure we each get three songs. And let's talk about three songs. If we're trapped at home, we're quarantined, we don't have iTunes, you got three songs, you got three records, okay? So we're each going to say three records that we would take with us on a desert island, what these songs mean to us, and some of the lessons that we've learned from these songs. They take us back to different memories, different times, different periods. So let's start off with Adam. You're up first. What would be your first Corona Island disc?
The first one for me was a very easy choice. It's a 1990 release Italian house track called Last Rhythm by Last Rhythm.
Quality.
Nice.
So yeah, this song, this was a house track, but it was played at a lot of raves in the early 90s, very early 90s, 1990, 91, which is... That was my kind of era, going out to illegal raves, all sorts of things. But this track in particular, it was one of those tracks that it was one of the first ones I'd heard on a mixtape by a local DJ, I think it was. And this track just seemed to have this sense of positivity. It was kind of a minor key, but whenever you heard it, no matter how you were feeling, it just sort of had that everything's all right sort of feeling to it. And the amount of times that
nice.
We'd been at parties, and there's always a rave where things get a bit dark and
out of hand,
and people get a bit sketchy and things. And then the amount of times this track would come on,
and
that was it. It just brought
a bit of tomfoolery.
And yeah, it just...
are you saying, Adam, that this music got you to go and chill, or the opposite?
Well, it just whenever it came on. Whatever was going on, it just brought such a positive feeling to the room. So even if there was sort of, it was just really...
Can we hear a track? Can we hear it?
It brought you a lot of took you to paradise.
And I'll tell you something else about that song.
Do you still listen to it today?
All the time. I've got three different versions of it on vinyl, and a friend of mine who I still see, his ex-girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, and another couple of friends of ours, when we were going out raving in the 90s, early 90s, we actually went, do you remember those shopping malls you could go and get a little card printed up in a machine?
Yeah,
of course, love that.
We got a whole lot of cards printed up with our phone numbers on and the Last Rhythm crew. So
nice.
We even called our posse after the Last Rhythm. We sort of gave it that respect.
So what do you say to your five daughters when you're putting the record on? You're like, this is from the 90s when Dad was in an illegal rave in the back room.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell them about it. I think the rave scene was possibly... certainly one of the biggest influences on culture.
Oh, mate, look, Wiley, put it into context. Rave came from the North and the South. And what we got in Manchester was a blend of Bournemouth tunes and Manchester from the raves of bowlers.
London was a leader in it as well. And that was the beauty of it. There were so many people doing so many different things in it.
And then they had their own twist according to the regions of the country.
In America, you had your Detroit sounds and your Chicago sounds, Richie Fingers and you know, Frank the Wolf and that. There was just so much creativity going on in music at the time. It was a brand new tool. Yes. It was just a wonderful time for me.
Love it, man.
By the way, I noticed today, a lot of the songs today evoke that 90s sound. You feel like it's coming back, right?
I think 80s has been back. 90s are coming back, I think. And I'm not sure what to make of it, really.
I just remember 1997 for 10 weeks of wet, wet, wet. Who doesn't?
All right, on that note, Pozzy, give us your first Corona Island disc.
Okay, well, this is going to go back to 1985.
Nice.
Now, at the time of 1985, to put it into context, I was 9. I was living in a place called Sunnybank, which is part of the Greater Manchester area, and living at home in my home with my parents. TV was limited to at max 4 stations.
Right.
So on a Saturday afternoon, if it wasn't Shabbos then, which it wasn't for me.
We'd go to the Mayfair.
Well, we'd go and see certain movies in the 1980s. And I would watch certain programs in the 1980s. So, for example, we'd watch Chips and Fall Guy and, you know, the A-Team. And there was music that transcended throughout the 80s. And that was by a guy from the 1920s in America, in Tennessee, by the name of Chester Atkins, and he abbreviated it to Chet. He was a certified guitar player, and he created the sounds that we will recall from my 80s, watching those TV programs and those movies. I'm going to play a little bit of a track, and this one is a collaboration with Chet Atkins and George Benson. George Benson was a black guy who had a deep soul in guitar playing.
George Benson was fantastic.
So Chet Atkins and George Benson created this song called Sunrise, and it was done in 1985. And it just takes me back to when films were amazing and programs, and it was just a very sweet time of the past 30 odd years.
That's beautiful, Pozzy, but yeah, I think lovely. You may be retconning there, because I remember Pozzy in the 80s, and you weren't listening to... anyway, moving on. You're more of a Right Said Fred guy, but anyway, we'll move on.
That's cutting, man.
I'm sorry. Cutting. Pozzy, play us the track. Play us the track.
So you put it into context, you're watching something like Magnum P.I. or you're watching...
Love Magnum.
But whatever it was, there was this guitar that was running in the background. And for me, Chet Atkins, I can't play guitar. My son Rafi, who's 12, can amazingly well. You can see in my background, I've got a couple of guitars. And now I'm just living vicariously through people like Rafi playing guitar. So that's Sunrise by Chet Atkins and George Benson, 1985. Just takes me back to a time when it was just simple, amazing summers, and having time with Winey.
I mean, hearing it back there, to me, that does take me straight back to all those shows. It is that sound has got a real familiarity to it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm watching Knight Rider over there. By the way, Pozzy, your son is an incredible musician, and he's got an incredible voice.
I have got no problem in plugging him.
Rocky he is Potter. The voice of Anglo Jewry.
He is. He's also the polymer of Edgware.
He's the voice of an angel, and how'd you get to monetize it? Let's get to tackle this, Pozzy.
Well, every time he's done a wedding, I've upped the ganze, because it used to be 25 quid a song, but then I doubled it. So he's basically earning 50 quid a song. He does 3 songs. Let's give you a context. He's bought that guitar.
Really? It's making more than you are.
He's bought an Apple Watch. He's bought a wireless speaker.
How old is he?
12.
He's 12 years old. He's pulling 150 quid a night cash. Very nice. I'm proud of him.
Canaan Horror.
All right. I think we'll move it on to...
Your first song.
Yours.
Okay, I'll give you my first song. And
it's so obvious what it's going to be. Or anyone the artist?
Diana Ross.
The artist.
It's got to be Diana Ross.
Anyone that knows me from back in the day knows what this is going to be. Although I do have to say
that
I have to preface this song in the current context because I'm going to begin with a Michael Jackson song.
Of course you are.
That knows me knows I love MJ. In recent times, there's been a bit of a re-evaluation of MJ, and I think I want to separate the man from the music, and I don't know what's, at this point, mythology. I don't know what's reality. But certainly, I feel like I do have to give a little bit of a disclaimer. So my first song is going to be Michael Jackson, Human Nature. And Pozzy, you know what this song takes me back? This song takes me back to the summer that me, you, and David Silvera went on a kibbutz. And I remember David would sit in his room and just play this song on a loop. And it's one of my favorite MJ songs. It's that moment when MJ left the Jackson 5. He kind of forged his own path. It's him. It's Quincy Jones firing on all cylinders. And if you listen to the way that he just sings the song, the way that he kind of like enhances the S's of the songs. And also in concert, this is a song that he loved. He would really make a point of doing a lot of moves, a lot of dancing. He always included the song in the concert repertoire. So I'm going to begin with Michael Jackson, Human Nature.
Amazing. Love it.
We're back. Okay, so we're ready for our second set of tunes. So we'll go back to Adam. Adam, what's your second tune? It's Corona Island Discs. You're stuck on the island. You're like Tom Hanks with Wilson. What are you listening to?
Well, I think my second track has to be by one of my all-time favorite bands, Stevie Dan. And this one's a great track called Kid Charlemagne. On the hill, the stuff was laced with kerosene. But yours was kitchen clean. Everyone stopped to stare at your Technicolor motorhome. Every apron had your number on the wall. You must have had it all. You go to L.A. on a dare and you go it alone. Could you live forever? Could you see the day? Could you feel your whole world fall apart and fade away? Get it long. Get it long, get when I was working in a very trendy menswear shop with...
what was it called?
It was called Flicks. Flicks Menswear.
To be honest, it was Burns.
No, we weren't quite Burns. We had red sale signs in the window all year. But there were a couple of guys in there who were like two of the coolest guys in Bournemouth, and they're a bit older than me. And they were in a boy band when they were younger, and they're brilliant musicians, the Pope Brothers. And one of them was the manager of the shop. And they used to play a lot of this in the shop. Right. And I just fell in love with Stevie Dan. And it finally opened up those 4 or 5 years where I would only listen to dance music. It opened my mind again a little bit. So I start listening to other music again.
Beautiful. Just to let the listeners know, two things. We're currently Zooming. I can see the two of you. When you played that song, Pozzy got up and was dancing. And firstly, Pozzy, you've still got it. Secondly, I have this image of Adam working in Flicks selling suits, menswear.
Beautiful. So it was more like a social club, that place was. But the actual song itself, I mean, the two guys, Walter Becker, the late Walter Becker, who was Jewish actually, and Donald Fagen were Stevie Dan, and every track they used to hand pick all the best session musicians, and they would literally audition the top musicians to play
great track
drums
great
or to track. Play. And this song's actually, it's a song about a drug dealer, and it's actually based on an LSD chemist that they used to know in San Francisco.
Nice.
And if you listen to the story, it's a beautiful story. It's about how he was the man, he had everything. And then it sort of goes towards the end that people leave that lifestyle, and it's a case of, but people still remember you as that guy, and people still don't trust you. And, you know, it's the pitfalls of the instant joy of what he's doing and the cool sort of celebrity status, but it doesn't last. And I love songs with stories, and this is a great story.
Nice.
Very nice.
Beautiful. Adam, I'm feeling it, brother.
I'm feeling it too. What was the best seller in Flicks?
I must say that I did tend to push the bootcut jeans. They were a personal favourite.
Did you sell Dr. Martens, or was it just the clothes?
Oh, no, it's just clothes. And
what were you earning? What were they paying you by the hour?
Minimum wage, £2.10.
Very little. There was no minimum wage back then. Funnily enough, though, it was in an arcade in Bournemouth, cool, where about 60 years previously, there was a cinema where that is now. And literally on the spot that I used to sell and serve at the till is where my grandmother, in like the 50s, used to sell tickets for the cinema. How about that?
Nice.
Yeah. How random.
We've gone full circle. I love English cinemas, by the way. We used to go to the Mayfair. I think it was £1.50. I remember going to see Back to the Future with my mother.
What did you get? Was it the Revels?
No, I had the ones that were like, it was like minty on the outside, chocolate on the inside. Oh, what was it called?
Yeah.
Can't remember.
Chocolate minty balls.
Oh, I love them. Love it. Love it. And if my mother was feeling in a good mood, she'd splash out and get the, what would we get? What were the one? Maltesers. That was
We had a box of Maltesers we shared once when we went to see Russ Abbott at the Bournemouth International Centre. Happy days. Really?
Russ Abbott!
And every time I see one of those boxes
she
of Maltesers.
She was Jewish. The woman who played his psychic.
Russ Abbott's Jewish.
No, Bella Ramberg.
Love Russ Abbott. All right, Posse, we're ready for your second track over here. What's the second track?
Okay, well, the second track, we're going to now 1994.
Good year.
It is a great year. We were teenagers. We were at King David. And I fondly remember going into underage bars and clubs with dodgy fake ID.
Nice.
It was like 14, 15, 16. So we were really starting to make out as if we were big, but we weren't.
Right.
And it was a very hippie. It was like a revival of the 1960s into the Manchester 1990s. And this song was written by a band who most people will know one track, if there's only one that you know, and that's by Pink Floyd. And it's, well, everyone knows Comfortably Numb, which is a very obvious song. This one is called Marooned. And it was made in 1994. And if you were not sure what you were doing with your life and you needed a little bit of clarity as to why you shouldn't do anything more with your life, then this was the song to basically make you flat, horizontal, and just enjoy just chilling out.
Is this Maroon 5, did you say?
No, that would be hideous.
You're holding a guitar in your hand. Would you like to play a few bars for the listener?
I think it was Ferris Bueller who got his saxophone out, like I've got a guitar out, and said, never had one lesson, don't know one note.
There you go. All right. Makes sense. Okay, so your second track was Pink Floyd.
Marooned by Pink Floyd.
Marooned, but which kind of makes sense because we're all marooned right now.
Yeah,
see what I did?
Topical, yeah.
See what I did? Topical.
I think that was set up for a lovely hole-in-one there.
There you go. All right. We're marooned. By the way, what do you have for your dinner tonight, Posse?
Lisa made a lovely bit of a chicken little number of a barbecue seasoning flavour.
Nice. What do you have, Bradders?
Jacket potatoes.
Gosh, spudgy-like.
What was inside the jacket?
Cheese, butter, beans.
What was in the jacket?
It was a feast of a jacket potato, I must have been. And I have to tell you, my wife, she seasons a jacket like no other. So, yeah.
Nobody makes a baked potato like Karen Bradley. I like them crispy, my jacket potatoes.
Well, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And ask Karen about how to crisp it and how to get a nice seasoning from it. Honestly, you won't be sorry.
Anyway, moving on. All right, so I got my second Trek.
Ready?
Being a Manchester native, I had to go Woo! With Oasis. I love Oasis. And I remember, as Pozzy was saying, there was a certain moment, and I guess Adam can relate to this, when suddenly everything was about Manchester. I felt like the whole country of England, suddenly London was no longer the capital.
The world, it was like the next thing after the Beatles. Manchester came on the map.
And I think, you know, it started with the Hacienda, and we had Spiral Carpets.
Tony Wilson.
Tony Wilson in Spiral Carpets. There was, who's that band?
Stone Roses.
New Order.
Joy Division, yeah.
Joy Division, Happy Monday, Stone Row, everything was Manchester.
And Man United as well.
Man United.
Oh, let it go.
Man United, but Man United were winning everything back in the day. If you would have told me 20 years ago that United would be struggling mid-table and City would be winning titles, I would have said you have more of a chance of me becoming a rabbi. But anyway. Yeah. So my second track is Oasis, and I didn't want to go with the typical Wonderwall because I felt that's a bit, you know what I mean? It's like it's the obvious track.
Obvious, yeah.
And I remember, was I with you, Adam? I remember seeing Oasis at Main Road, and that was like it was a pivotal concert because Oasis, the Gallagher brothers are both Man City fans, and they were playing Main Road, and it was a concert that even. You know, even today, people still talk about the Oasis at Main Road concert. One of the best live performances I've ever seen. So I went with Champagne Supernova. I love it. Like Adam says, it's a song that tells a story. It's also one of their longer tracks, which I like. And I figured if I'm on a desert island, I need a bit of a longer track. So I went with Oasis Champagne Supernova. And I like it because tells a story, and also the song has quiet moments, it has like, you know, the guitar thrash moments. It's got it. I think it's really Oasis at their peak and at their prime. So I went,
Winey? I really thought you were more of a Carpenters fan. You've really surprised me tonight.
Yeah, I do like the Carpenters, but I went with Oasis Champagne Supernova.
Quality.
I will say that even from a southern perspective, when this song was out, when this album was out, Manchester was ubiquitous in Britain. For the first time, really, probably since the Beatles in the 60s, that London had its shine taken away for quite a long time there.
Do you know what was funny? I always found it, after I'd left Manchester, how proud I was to be. Because when people found out that I was, they were like, oh my God, it was the most amazing music scene in the world. And I'm like, when I was there, I was a little bit subjective to it.
I look at my musical influences as a young teenager. They're all Manchester. They were the Stone Roses.
It's all your best mates, man. We're sorted.
Sorted.
Anyway, let's have a listen.
Adam, I have to ask you, if you were to pick one Oasis track, what would you go with?
Wow. That's a difficult one. I mean,
not to put you on the spot.
I'll be honest, Champagne Supernova would be up there. What's that one? Leave No Shadow. I quite like that tune.
I love that song.
And Supersonic. What a track that is.
The sun, he casts no shadow. What a song.
Yeah. It's hard. Oh. I couldn't tell you one of their songs, really. It's difficult.
Pozzy, what would you go with? One Oasis track.
Little by Little.
Is that an Oasis track? Never heard of it.
One for your headphones. You've got to listen to their back catalogue. Time Flies, Here and Now, Lots of Story, Morning Glory. Oasis is everything and everything of Manchester, and it oozes just everything about you, mate.
you know what I like about Oasis? I like the fact that, in a way, the band did not have a happy ending. They don't speak. There's something like rebellious and poetic and very northern about that.
But do you know what might happen? They might actually connect now that they're in, like we all are as human beings, in a very weird, marooned, quarantined position.
I think they're just waiting for someone to give them a huge...
Sum of money.
That's the one, yeah. Huge sum of money, and I think you'll see them play Heaton Park. That's my tip.
I mean, I actually saw Oasis at Nebworth at the quarter of a million people.
Mate, you went at heyday.
And I must say, they were very good, but what spoiled it for me is that the supporting group, the group who played just before them as the sun was going down, was The Prodigy. And they absolutely stole the show.
Have you seen the documentary, A Supersonic?
Yeah, I loved it. On Amazon. Brilliant.
Yeah, great documentary. Love it.
I'll tell you, I personally don't have a lot of interest in Oasis after their second album. I don't really rate their stuff that much after that. However, I do rate Noel Gallagher on Talk Sport, which is a sport radio show.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He's a great pundit. He's
brilliant.
A bit like Gary Neville, very good pundit.
Yeah, but he's so funny pundit. As well.
He's funny and he's good. I think we're on to the last round.
Adam, this is your baby.
Make it count. On the Hipsid podcast, you are stuck in Corona Island discs. where are you living now, by the way?
Edgware. I'm around the corner from Johnny. It's lovely.
Edgware, or as they say, Wedgware. Explain for the listeners, Posse, what does wedge mean?
It's Jew backwards.
There you go. So as kids, we never like to say the word Jew. Is he Jewish? Because I think we suffered a lot of anti-Semitism. So we had our little code word. So we'd always say, is he a wedge?
Or if you were smoking cigarettes, it was, is she Benson and Edge?
Yeah, Benson and Edges, wedges. there you go. All right, Adam, what's your third track from Edgware?
So my third track.
Quarantined.
This is almost impossible. This whole
get comfortable, Adam.
This whole process has been impossible, pretty much. But I was thinking maybe a Stone Roses, maybe an In Spiral Carpets, but then I thought, no, there's far too much mank on this podcast as it is.
So Baccarat.
I dropped it. And then I thought, there's only one band on the planet that deserves to be in every single list, and that's the Beatles. For me to choose a Beatles song is...
Amazing.
Oh, I could maybe choose you my favourite album.
I thought you were going to go with Wet, Wet, Wet for a second, but no, the Beatles.
It was close.
Or the Beatles. Marty or
in the end, you came over the Beatles.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so I felt I had to give respect to, like, the greatest band ever. And I mean, when trying to think of what song to choose, how can you not?
That must have been a nightmare.
It was impossible, and I still can't. The reason I'm choosing the song that I'm choosing is because... It was written by George Harrison, and I think George Harrison was a real underrated talent of that band. I mean, he wrote so many great songs. While My Guitar Gently Weeps, he wrote Here Comes the Sun. I mean, just magnificent songs. Actually, it's quite interesting you mentioned Wonderwall earlier by Oasis, because I don't know if you know where the name Wonderwall comes from.
Never.
So it was an album by George Harrison called Wonderwall Music.
Well, that was their influence,
wasn't
it?
Nice little link there.
That was their main influence.
See what he did?
Yeah. So what I've gone for is a track called Savoy Truffle, which is just a brilliant, fun piece of music. I could have gone with A Day in the Life, Eleanor Rigby, The Work. I mean, you name it, I'm the Walrus. There's tons that you could have done. But Savoy Truffle, it's a really well-produced tune.
I don't think I know this song.
Never heard of it.
Savoy Truffle. All right.
So it's called Savoy Truffle, and as you can hear from the lyrics, There's a lot of talking about desserts, chocolates, chocolate box flavours. And the reason why it is, the song itself, now this is what I love about the Beatles as well. I mean, so many of their songs are so deep in meaning, and some of them are just little ditties, some of them are just little stories. This one is written by George Harrison, and he was very, you know, as a lot of people know, he was best mates with Eric Clapton. And at the time of writing this song, George Harrison just wanted to write something to Eric Clapton telling him, if you don't stop eating sweets, you're going to ruin your teeth. Because Eric Clapton apparently had a really sweet tooth and was eating loads of puddings and chocolates. So that's all this song is about. And I love the simplicity of it. You know, it says towards the end, the pain is going to cut through and you're going to shout aloud. And then it's just listing chocolates. The simplicity of the Beatles music. And then you go into like Abbey Road and Revolver and things like that. And the complexities and the production of it. The band just had everything, every genre they could do. And this to
me... You love them.
It's just a fun little song that they did that's not that well known.
The Beatles mean so much to you. I mean, Adam, you're such a Beatles mania fan that you can go through their back catalogue. You are a genius when it comes to knowing stuff like this.
I think a lot of people are when it comes to the Beatles because, you know, I grew up listening to it. My parents used to listen to the Beatles a lot. They grew up in the era. They were in the 60s going to see bands and things in the clubs in London. So
I remember my father had like a record collection and he had a lot of crap, but when it came to the Beatles, they're just timeless. Absolutely. Yeah. Every generation has their Beatles. Where were you when you first heard the song?
I don't remember. I remember I heard this album when I was probably about 14, I guess. So I guess that would have been then. But it's only the thing about the Beatles is that you can keep going back to albums and things and that you weren't so familiar with, and you can listen to it again. You can appreciate it so much more another 30 years on. Like there's the album Hard Day's Night, which is it's a pop song album, but there's some great tunes on there. And that's the kind of Beatles things I kind of liked when I was growing up because that's what my parents listened to. But as I got older, I sort of looked towards the later stuff, which is where they had free range of Abbey Road studios where they could spend the whole day in the life took 3 days to make, whereas their first album took 9 hours. You know, that's one track against an album. So the more progressive stuff is what I've sort of grown into more as I've got older, really.
Nice. Pozzy, what's your favorite Beatles song?
It's Been a Hard Day's Night.
Nice. All right, Pozzy, we're ready for your last track.
How about you, Winey? Name a couple of your favourites.
My favourite is Penny Lane.
Nice.
Like, favourite album, because I can't give you my favourite song.
Yellow Submarine. Do you know what I know by heart?
I love Yellow Submarine. I love what's the one of the octopus, Under the Sea?
Yeah, that was great in Yellow song. Submarine. Yeah, that's a great song. That was Ringo, one of only two songs written by Ringo Starr.
That doesn't get the credit, Ringo, does he?
No, he got the money. He got the royalty, so he's not.
He got the girl, that's for sure.
But nobody actually drummed like Ringo Starr, because what people didn't realise is that Ringo Starr is a left-handed drummer. Now, I think it was his father or his stepfather or whoever it was, bought him a right-handed drum kit, saying, you're going to learn to play right-handed. But he didn't. He carried on playing a right-handed drum kit with a left hand. So all his little drum rolls and things are almost backwards. So his drumming is very, very unique. And you can hear it in some of the little fills that he puts in. They're very unique. Fantastic.
Nice. He's nice. Do your girls like the Beatles? Your
love
kids?
Them.
Posse too?
Yeah, love them.
Well, I have to be honest. The kids listen to what I listen to and what they listen to. And Beatles is not something that I've really put on in the car or anything like that. I'm afraid to say. But now that Adam's talking about it, I'm obviously missing a trick. I mean, there are a few tracks that I do like to play, but I may have to include it into my new playlist.
There you go. All right. Corona playlist.
Yeah, I like it.
Lovely stuff. Pozzy, you ready for your last track?
I am. I really am.
All right, Pozzy, on the Hipsit podcast.
Yeah.
This is your last track, Desert Island Discs, Corona Edition. Okay. I hope we don't get sued by the BBC for doing this.
To be honest, all bets are off and all options are on the table. I think everyone's in a bit of a pot at the moment. Everyone's raping each other. It's a red
hand. Bring it.
Exactly. So, what can I tell you about this song? Well,
the name.
Yeah, what it's called first.
I'll start at the beginning. It's Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing.
Nice.
Nice tune.
He can play the honky tonk like anything. Saving it up Friday night with the Sultans, with the Sultans of Swing.
Now, you just think about Mark Knopfler. Picture this. He grew up in Newcastle. Actually, he was born in Scotland, and he was delivered milk by Billy Connolly. His parents in the 1960s moved...
Oh, the comedian, Billy Connolly.
Correct, the Scottish comedian, correct. Yes. And Mark Knopfler moved down to Newcastle with his family, and there he had a band before what came to be known as Dire Straits. And Mark Knopfler is the kind of person which is, it's a cliche, but it seems to be of truth for anything. To become a subject matter expert, you have to have invested 10,000 hours. Mark Knopfler produced the sound that we all recognize on the guitar. It is so distinctive to him that Fender, actually the manufacturer, the great American Fender manufacturer of guitars, have commissioned. So you've got the Les Paul, but you've now got Knopfler sounds. Knopfler did collaborations with the likes of Chet Atkins. If you listen to the Policeman's Ball in the 1980s, Mark Knopfler took what was a guitar. He used to fall asleep with it on his bed and wake up with it on him because he wanted to invest. He knew that this guitar was going to change his life. He wrote incredible songs. He was an inspiration for a whole generation of guitar heroes, people who were maybe just playing acoustic, went on to electric, went from four to six string. Fender became powerful in terms of a brand. But Mark Knopfler ended up transcending the world with the band Dire Straits. And they were at a time when music and the titles of some of their tracks, Romeo and Juliet, you know,
great song,
Tunnel of Love, you know, Money for Nothing, Brothers in Arms. I mean, these are songs that are timeless. Mark Knopfler created music that never had a beginning, but it will never have an end. Because, well, Raffi's playing Knopfler songs, and there must be a 50, 60 year age gap. If that doesn't say how the Beatles were inspired by Oasis, it's the same difference. So for me, Mark Knopfler,
I'm not sure the Beatles were inspired by Oasis.
I meant the opposite, right?
Possibly. Right. Is that in the same sort of terms as Wings are the band the Beatles could have been, sort of thing?
All right, just for the listeners to understand, when Posse goes wrong, Adam and Winey have to pop me. They have to turn the screws to have a little go at me at a time of quarantine and maroon.
Without Oasis, there'd be no Beatles. That's
well, or maybe there would be no Oasis without Beatles. But anyway, the point being is Mark Knopfler is, to me, just one of the greatest guitar heroes. He's inspired a generation. For me, it was just about growing up in Manchester again. But then when I went to Israel, when I went to America, just music, it was just always in my ears. It was always a go-to track when somewhere I hadn't been and I wanted to feel comfortable. I put that in my ears and I would just relax and then start mooching about the area, listening to Mark Knopfler in my ears, thinking, it's all right, Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing. So that's my third and final track.
It's a great title for a song. I think, Adam, did Eric Clapton play on that song? I think, maybe. Am I crazy?
I don't know, actually. I mean, it's certainly got his sound to it.
It's got his fingerprints all over it.
I mean, like, when the Beatles song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, is a George Harrison song, but you hear the released version, that's Eric Clapton on there. None of the Beatles could play the guitar like Clapton could. I think you could be right. I don't know.
That is one that I'm going to leave as my final Corona Island disc for people to go in. If you've got lots of time on your hand, which I'm sure you have, Mark Knopfler's got an incredible back catalogue, and enjoy the stuff.
There's one thing for sure, that when this podcast hits iTunes, sales of Dire Straits are just going to go to the moon.
That
and they should thank us for this.
Yeah, they should credit us.
To be perfectly honest, I don't want any credit. I just want 100% of the royalty.
Yeah.
Just like the Beatles would be nothing without Oasis, so too Mark Knopfler would be nothing without Posse. So
absolutely.
Want to acknowledge that.
I must say,
are you ready for the final track?
Are you ready, Johnny? Ozzy, you ready?
Born.
So, guys, what groups? Because I found this really impossible. Name it. Are there any groups that you feel that you should have included on this? Because for me,
I could have gone for loads,
Underworld, maybe. Depeche Mode, Blondie, half the catalogue of 90s.
Yeah, but you've been there all day, mate, because you're flitting between tracks and tracks. I listen to thousands of genres. I had to be specific.
It's an impossible.
I would have gone U2. I could have gone. It's endless. Endless. Okay. Yeah. I didn't do my final track.
Let's hear it.
My final track is actually from a friend of mine. It's the great Benny Friedman, who's the Benny Friedman is the. He's Jewish. He's a Chabad rabbi. His uncle is the legendary Avraham Fried. OG Avraham Fried. So Benny Friedman has a song called Ivri Anochi, and the reason I picked this is, being a rabbi, it is an explosion of Jewish pride. It's just like the whole. You really have to see the video to kind of to get the full perspective, because it's this explosion of Jewish pride and Jewish love, and it's got quite an interesting sort of drum beat to it. And it's very much. It just reminds me of my kids. My kids love the song. And it's the kind of song that, you know, when we're all down, we put it on and we just start dancing. We start jumping around and we go full frontal nudity. So Benny Friedman in the house.
Nice, I like it.
So I was down to two tracks. It was either Benny Friedman, this explosion of Jewish pride, Jewish love, Jewish energy, or the soundtrack, the opening credits to Supergram. I wasn't sure.
Supergram.
I went with Benny Friedman. Paper
between. When push came to shove.
Love a bit of Supergram. So that's it. That's my final song. That's me. And that's Desert Island Corona version, Desert Island Disc. This is the Hipsid Podcast. And as we end off the podcast, I'd like to go around and ask everyone for some serious thoughts about what we're taking from this terrible pandemic, and maybe some of the positives, and if we can sort of connect it to maybe Passover, and we'll call it a day.
If I could just say, the way I'm seeing the situation we're in at the moment is this unique situation where the world around us that so many people are getting sick of is a very extroverted world where people are always, look at what I'm wearing, look at what I've got, look at what I own, look at what I earn. And they're actually only thinking of themselves in an extroverted way. Now we're forced to sit indoors, to isolate. We have no option to show off our extrovert nature. We have to look inside more now, because a lot of people don't like being with themselves. They don't like being left with their own thoughts. Well, you are now. And once you can be more comfortable with yourself and love yourself more, you're going to be more comfortable and love other people more. And I can just see this, hopefully, in many cases, becoming a really, people just connect more with themselves. I think it's important.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Pozzy, I don't know what's going on by you, but the lights are out. I'm looking at you now, sat in the dark.
Well, I've just decided that in preparation for going to go and see the family, because my life has become... Well, put it like this, woulda, shoulda, coulda are three words that do not enter my vocabulary. I don't want to live a life, and I haven't ever wanted to live a life where, let's suppose, woulda, you know, we may do that, we could perhaps. And I'm very much of the essence right now with the craziness that's going on is my life begins at home, my day begins and ends with home. And for me, it's about taking stock of the quality, the investment that Lisa and I have put into this family. And I go out into the big wide world for many years, hustling, trying to make what we call ends meet, and end up always coming home and thinking, why can't I invest more time with my family and make that my focus, and then go out into the world and people will see me? Well, funny how what we're experiencing now is everyone's taking a deep dive into who they are and identifying, do I have the inner strength to be honest with myself, because if I can, then hopefully when all this comes to a little bit of a lull, is we will go to life with a bit more of appreciation that we've got breath in our lungs and we've got blood in our veins, and we have to take our life preciously, and we have to love who we have around us. We have to respect who we have around us. We have to be offering to say, how can we help you, instead of me saying, you know, it's all about I. And I think if we look out for others, especially when it comes from home, and we get our lives right now, then when we do engage with the bigger, wider world, we're going to do things on different terms, and we're going to do things with a lot more zest for life. So if you want to do something, don't waste any more time putting off what you should be doing, because we know right now there are sirens in the background, which is just identifying the reality that we are living in crazy pandemic, scary times, and this disease is impervious to everyone. What we have got is control of our heads and our bodies and our homes. Look after it, and then when we go out into the big wide world, please God, soon, like we did when we left Mitzrayim around Pesach, we have to believe that there is something greater than all of us. And I believe that the Almighty, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has brought something called the 11th plague. And we are now being tested amongst all nations of peace in our lifetime. And please God, we will all go out into the world loving each other, loving ourselves, and wanting to do things that we would never have done before.
And if we can carry on the 2 meters distancing from the general public, all the better.
Absolutely. And just to clarify, it's not called social distance. It's physical distance, but we should never have social distance.
Right. Pozzy, you're on fire, my friend. Just to parlay Pozzy's little truth bomb over there, that I realize that sometimes, you know, it's the old adage that less is more. And sometimes, you know, the less that I have, the more happier I can be. And, you know, living in Brooklyn, New York, everything is about, you know, which restaurant you're going to, what car you're driving, what you're wearing. And just to kind of, I guess, parlay on what you're both saying, that I've realized that there's something about having a family meal, cooking together, sitting together, dwelling together, that could give me, you know, more joy than any restaurant, than you know, any Instagram story. And just to really appreciate what I have. And I don't like I'm not the type of rabbi that's going to give a some sort of spiritual quackery and say this is a sign, you know, this
Go
is a sign.
Go esoteric on us.
Give us some
quackery.
But I do think, the parallel of leaving Mitzrayim, of plagues, and certainly this year by my Seder, I will be dipping my finger in the wine for an 11th time, and I'll be thinking about the blood that's been spilt.
Right.
And hopefully, the one thing that I have learned is the power of connection, even though, you know, we're socially distant, as you said, Pozzy, but we're also very connected. The fact that it's reconnected my friendship with the two of you means a lot to me, and it's something I hope to carry forth. And we should not be doing this only in pandemics. We should be doing this in, all the time. So I want to wish you both a Chag Sameach, happy Passover.
Absolutely.
And hopefully, just as the Jews are redeemed, we should all be redeemed very, very soon.